If present trends continue, by the year 2010, the average American work week will be 60 hours long.
For most people, no matter how hard you work, you don't get ahead.
In the next edition of your favorite do-it-yourself radio show, you'll ask yourself some hard questions about how you spend your work time.
Work is the expression of self into the world. It's an oddity that we have so identified that with paid employment.
From Seattle, the Earth on the Air Radio Works presents Earth on the Air.
Why do we work? For money? For love? For glory? For guilt?
During the next half hour, Earth on the Air's grassroots contributors give some thought to the notions of work and the need to make a living.
This first piece is about a young couple living off the land.
We live several miles off of a paved road. You can't hear towns or freeways. We live in a cabin up in the hills. There are bear and mountain lion and deer and...
That's not true. We live in a city. We live in a high-rise. I have two cars, including a muscle truck. She's got a Camaro. And we commute across bridges every day and pay a lot of tolls and have big stereos.
The two make a good portion of their living illegally, so they've become adept at jumbling information that might identify them. They released this tape recording of a visit to their farm on the condition that Earth on the Air scramble their voices.
We're not going to make any more footprints here, if you can. So. Okay.
After smoothing over the grass where they've just hiked, the growers duck into a gully through thick brush and emerge at a cultivated hillside, mostly hidden from above by a canopy of trees. The air is sweet with perhaps 100 young marijuana plants, each about 4 or 5 feet high.
Today it's a bit overcast, so you don't see how beautiful it looks when the sunlight is dappling through and the plant comes alive, sparkling in the sunlight, and the shadows are moving as the leaves overhead move in the wind. And it's a really special plant. We've really developed an interesting relationship with it as a living plant and not just a dried product.
Today, these farmers have come to thin out their plants and to talk a little about their work.
What are some sort of typical types of people that would be doing this kind of work? What kinds of folks do this?
I don't know. I don't know if you can stereotype a marijuana grower or a user, really, and except that they're different.
A lot of people who have managed to support an alternative lifestyle in one way or the other are creative people. They're writers, they're musicians, they work with a craft, they can set up some sort of mail order business, and the marijuana growing has facilitated that for some people, I think.
But it could also facilitate a yacht. It could also facilitate a brand new sports car. So to say that it, facilitates the arts is not necessarily any more true than it could facilitate trips to Monte Carlo.
What about the prospect of getting caught? Is the risk worth it?
That's a hard question, but it seems to be right now, But what is the risk? What is the risk?
Well, I guess the idea of spending time in a cell.
It's a terrible thought. It's a terrible thought. And that's why you don't give it away. That's why it's sold. Because you're risking your ass out here. It's something that you, of course, shut out of your mind. And you don't like to focus on it. You can't focus on it too much. But it's always there.
Like everyone else, I was enculturated to think that something that's illegal is morally wrong. And I still, when you ask these questions, I still feel like there is something wrong. You can't totally defend it. There's something there. It's illegal. It's a risk. It's wrong. And yet on so many other levels of my being, I'm happy with where I'm living. I'm happy with my work. I'm happy with being a moderate pot smoker. I it's funny to have to justify it, because in a way what we're doing is not really any different from what a lot of people do. You know, how many people question who they're working for, what this company does, what product they produce, what sort of impact it has on the environment, or what sort of value it actually has to society. These are all legitimate questions for 80% of the occupations out there. And yet, because what they're doing is not illegal, they don't have to continually ask themselves these questions and justify personal habits or whatever to themselves or to anybody. In my opinion, someone who works in a nuclear plant, or who manufactures pesticides, or who works at Los Alamos lab down in New Mexico, all these people, even people in Silicon Valley, they've got serious questions to ask themselves about what the value of their work is to the planet, to themselves, to anybody.
People have spend 40 hours at work, another 10 to 20 hours commuting to and from work, and they get home, all they really want to do is veg out. Who wants to sit down and think about, well, what are we doing to the planet now, and what are we going to do to change our lives? People just have to work so hard, so much of their energy, to pay for their food, to pay for their house and their transportation costs. They don't have a lot of extra time left over to contemplate it, what to do with their lives. And it's also one of the things that I think makes marijuana such an enemy of the work mode, you know, the Calvinistic work mode, is that sometimes when people smoke a joint, they get this idea in their head that says, I don't want to go to work today. And that's a real dangerous thought, that I don't want to work as hard. I don't want to sacrifice my whole life just to stay even.
You don't think there's anything wrong with that, though? I'm sure some people would say, oh, that's really scary. What if everybody did that?
Did what?
Said they didn't want to go to work.
You wouldn't have as many problems as you do have right now, because then perhaps people would work 30 hours a week and there would be more people employed. Maybe the same amount of work hours in around the country, but fewer per person. Wouldn't that be something else?
You all are not only defending marijuana, but an alternative lifestyle, right? A simpler way living on the land. And marijuana helps support you in this. Is that something that is just nice for you folks to do, or is it... is that good for the world at large that you're doing this?
It wouldn't work for the world at large, I think, for obvious reasons. This is kind of a unique time and place in history where, because marijuana is illegal, because so many people want it, the price is high, it supports this sort of economy where it makes it worthwhile. You can support an alternative lifestyle by selling a couple of pounds of marijuana every year. It's not a long-term solution for creating alternative lives, back to the land lifestyles. It's just happened to work for some people, I think.
How many people can afford the American dream these days? How many people can afford to live on a farm? Family farms in this country have been going bankrupt, belly up, for the last several decades. It's been going on since the Grapes of Wrath days. These kind of things have been going on.
Well, the American dream takes many forms, and I feel like we've achieved it in some odd way here. It's a paradox, and it's hard to say that this is 100% good, but I feel like the American dream is to live in peace and to not harm other people or have to use other people or too many resources, you know, to live and to be free. And that's what we're trying to do here. That's our vision of the American dream. And as long as you are adhering to not trying to not hurt other people, then I think the ends sometimes justify the means.
I haven't completely worked it out. And I also do wonder about the sort of making some kind of Faustian bargain of sorts here, being able to have a little bit of a cushion maybe in a few years in my life. But what did I trade off? I don't know. But all I know is that this may be the first year that I've earned over poverty wages in about 15 years of being an adult in America. So I don't feel too guilty about that.
Get born, keep warm, short pants, romance, learn to dance, get dressed, get blessed, try to be success, please her, please him, buy gifts, don't steal, don't live, 20 years of schooling and they put you on a day shift. Look out, kid, they keep it all here. Better jump down a manhole, light yourself a candle, don't wear sandals, try to avoid the scandals. If you don't wanna be a bum, you better not chew gum. And the pump don't work 'cause the vandals took the handle.
remember what you wanted to do for work when you were a child?
Yes.
What was that?
I wanted to be a home economist and work in food.
Okay, and now you...
I work in the food business as a vice president of marketing.
Okay. Do you like that job?
Yes.
What is it you like about it?
I work in a product I like. I mean, it's very, very hard work, but what I do is in a business that I like, which is food and eating.
Mm-hmm. Do you think your job benefits society?
I'm not sure I'd put it that way. Theoretically, you could say yes, because people have to eat. Someone has to provide the food product, yes.
If you didn't have to worry about money, would you still have a job?
No.
What would you do with your time?
Now, I would do whatever I wanted to do with my time. My perfect vacation is to go on a desert island, be with my husband, and never see another soul.
What do you think of the American work ethic?
I believed it when I was a kid, and I think as you get older and find out work is not everything, then you decide which is more important, life or work. And as you get older, the tides change. When you're young, you want to be successful. It means something to you. When you get older, being successful has less meaning than the type of life you live and the quality of life you live.
I sell fish.
And do you like selling fish?
Within reasonable limits, yes. Yeah.
What do you like about it?
I like it when it gets so busy, you don't know what's coming next. And everything is saying you should be going crazy, you should be going nuts, you should be getting the hell out of here, something like that, and you don't.
Would you say that your job benefits society in some way?
Oh, sure, why not? My job, I think, benefits society a whole lot more than the people I see hanging out by the stairs all day selling crack.
Do you remember what you wanted to do for work when you were a child?
Yeah, be a carpenter.
Okay, and now what do you do?
I'm a carpenter.
Do you like that work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's real fulfilling.
Well, what do you like about it?
Seeing a project go from start to finish, something that wasn't there at the beginning and is there when you're done and gone.
Is there anything you don't like about it?
Hitting my fingers.
Okay. Do you think the job you do benefits society?
Yeah. I make places for people to live, comfortable places.
What do you think about the American work ethic?
I think it kind of sucks. I'd just soon work for nothing as money and do something else for money. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I like to work to work.
Work is great stuff. Work is what makes life meaningful. Now, if you're talking about jobs, money-making work, that's a very different type of thing. That's a new invention.
Joe Dominguez and Vicki Robin are the authors of Your Money or Your Life.
Anthropologists have done studies of early Stone Age man and woman and of pre-industrial societies, you know, primitive, quote-unquote primitive societies, and have found that the basic amount that people needed to work in order to support themselves, in order to have enough to eat and a place to sleep, was about 3 hours a day, a person. And the rest of their lives was spent in religious ceremony, in visiting with one another, in planning festivals, in raising their children and teaching their children skills, and in exploration of the world. So along comes the Industrial Revolution, which is supposed to make our lives so much better. And what happens? We get locked into the workplace.
We've been sold a bill of goods in our society that jobs are good and that they're vital and that we ought to create more of them. But see, 100 years ago, we were told the opposite. We were told that as part of the Industrial Revolution, the whole purpose was to eliminate meaningless work, to have more leisure time. There was the whole advent of work-saving devices to eliminate the dumb jobs that people do, and now we're trying to create more jobs. There's something wrong here.
We have got bought into this kind of jobism in this culture where we so elevate the people who are in paid employment and we so denigrate the people who aren't for whatever reason that of course everybody wants to flock to the workplace in order to feel good about themselves. We also judge people by the size of their paycheck.
People look for identity, look for self-importance, look for meaning, look for self-esteem, look for all kinds of things, look for love in their jobs. It's not there. It's a job. It's only a job. Really, it's just a means to an end. It's only a job, and you can do it with integrity. You can enjoy it if it's appropriate to enjoy it, but it's not going to provide things that are meant for other aspects of life to provide.
Do you remember what you wanted to do for work when you were a child?
Yes. I wanted to be an actress.
And what do you do now?
I'm a baker.
Okay. Do you like your job?
No, I don't.
What don't you like about it?
The boss verbally abuses me, and she treats me like a peon, and I work very strange hours. I work from midnight to 8 in the morning.
If you didn't have to worry about money, would you have a job at all?
No. Not like that. I would work all the time. I would paint, and I would write, but I wouldn't have a job, like a stupid job like that.
Do you remember what you wanted to do for a job when you were a child?
Well, basically, I wanted to do pretty much what I do now, which is operate machinery.
So you like your job?
Yeah, I like it.
What do you like about it?
I don't have to deal with people. I run machines. You know, that's the truth.
Do you think your job benefits society?
Certainly. You know, we got to have the steel to build anything that we use.
So there's nothing about your job that troubles you?
No, besides the fact that it's not environmentally very good, you know.
And what do you think about what we call the American work ethic?
Well, I think there's too many people that don't really want to work, you know. That's my basic feeling. So I like to work.
My name is Leonard. I have a BS degree in biology. I have a degree in medical technology. I've worked in laboratories all my life. Okay? I moved up here to move back to Washington, which I grew up half of my childhood here. I couldn't find a job. So I had to survive. I didn't have any money when I got here. So I came out here with my guitar and started playing on the street. And I found out, I've been doing it 9 months. And I found out I can make money out here.
I know y'all won't let me down. I've worked in your orchards of peaches and prunes, slept on the ground by the light of your moon. At the edge of your cities you will see us, and then we come with the dust and we're gone with the wind.
We never had a place. I mean, we were always migrating, and the only thing we had was a car, and we traveled back and forth on that. We never had friends, actual friends, because, I mean, you moved too much.
This tape about Oregon migrant workers was submitted by Sandra Dorr of Portland.
I try to think back of what we used to live in, and I never saw it this bad. The living conditions are worse. They're living in crowded conditions. When before, at least you had a cabin by yourself, and now you have to share it with, you know, 10 or 12 other people. There's this road. I need to go a little further.
Maria Loredo, who's a health service coordinator at a medical clinic for migrants, was herself a migrant child. She shares a poem about children who move and grow with the crops.
This poem was written by my brother, Raul Peña, and when he wrote it, he also, he was the youngest in the family that migrated with all of us, and he got out of the migrant life. And the reason that he wrote this poem is that he went back to working with migrants 3 or 4 years ago, working with the state, and it brought back a lot of memories for him and a lot of other things that he was keeping in, he wrote, and so he gave me this copy. I have been everywhere. Most migrants travel all over this country of ours, bringing food to our table,
everywhere.
Working sun up to sunset.
Most migrants travel all over this country of ours, bringing food to our tables, working sun up to sunset, toiling under the hot sun and the freezing cold. For low wages, unsanitary living conditions, to feed and clothe their family. I have been everywhere. Migrants flood the roads of harvest to Pennsylvania, Florida, Chicago, and the Great Northwest, following the crops and returning home to start all over again.
The first year that we came to Oregon, that was in 61, my dad had said that we were going to go back to school, and that was the year that it was going to be my junior high year. I was going to be in junior high, and I was really excited about going to school. But when we got back to Texas, my dad and my stepmother decided that I didn't need it. That school was in sixth grade was enough for all women, and that I had learned to read and write, and that's all I needed.
I have been everywhere. The children. They store their belongings in a box under their bed or cot. They might use a shelf made from a milk or orange crate. By age 10, most migrant children know they face a life of stoop labor in the fields of their lives.
I am Sergio Gonzalez. Tengo 10 años. I am 10 years old.
Did you drive this truck?
Yes.
How long have you been driving?
Since I was 5.
What else do you do?
Drive, and sometimes I pick berries.
Are you a good picker?
Not so good, but kind of.
Where do you come from?
From Oregon.
You're from Oregon? All the time? Have you always been from Oregon?
No, from Mexico too.
I have been everywhere. Ask a migrant child.
Where did you hurt your arm?
Where did you hurt your arm?
In the cherry orchard of Oregon.
In the cherry orchards of Oregon.
Where was your sister born?
In the lettuce field of California.
When were the
car tires new?
Car tires new. During the spinach harvest of Texas.
The crops
become a calendar. I have been everywhere. The migrant child crayons a life of cloudless skies, faceless people, and endless roads, leading nowhere, with a fence on each side of the road that he cannot get off.
Roads that he cannot get off, even if he wants to.
I have been everywhere,
and I have gotten nowhere.
See the byword, everybody get to work on time. There ain't no unemployment, I believe I'm gonna lose my mind.
Griffin Household, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, on a Tuesday afternoon. Patrick Griffin, or Mr. Mom, has moved out of the workplace and into the home place. Here's his story. And a little white whale
on the go. I wasn't always Mr. Mom. I used to be a lawyer. Hard to believe, I know. I find it hard to believe myself sometimes. I have to dig around in the back closet where we keep the old coats, find my law degree and read it again, just to make sure. But it's all in Latin. I wish I could remember deciding to be a lawyer, but you know how that is. One day you're a college kid, frolicking, possibly drunk. The next day, graduation's bearing down on you like a pair of headlights on a deserted road, and you can't help it. You freeze. There's nothing to be afraid of, you tell yourself. You're bright, you're educated, you're articulate, you test well. You just don't know how to do anything. So, you go to law school. I'm not saying I didn't have ideals. I was a right-thinking, left-leaning person, just like anybody. I may have been a little hazy on the details, but I did want to, you know, do good work, help the less fortunate, take the advantages I'd been given, and give back. Anyway, I gave it a shot. I fought the good fight for a few years. I got down in the trenches. That's the trouble with law, though. No matter what you intend, you end up down in the trenches. It's an adversary system. There isn't any other place to put you. I slugged it out, not for the world, but for a few square yards at a time, in lawsuits that took longer than World War I. The issue was never justice, never liberty. It was always something small, something hard to explain, something about the statute of limitations. I couldn't have stuck it out much longer than I did. I wasn't determined enough. But not many are. That's just a fact. Because fighting the good fight as a lawyer is too exhausting. It's not that the ends you achieve are so big. It's the means. The means are so fantastically intricate. It would almost be funny. The rhetorical overkill, the Latin cliches, the unbelievable paper consumption. The law would almost be funny if so many good people didn't get lost in it. God knows what all those good people could accomplish with the same amount of work. In the sunlight and on high ground. I like what I'm doing now. Raising a two-year-old, well, raising makes it sound like I know what I'm doing. Minding a two-year-old, following a two-year-old around. It's not glorious work. When people hear what I'm doing, they say, good for you. But they think, unemployed. Still, there are consolations. I get nap breaks. Nobody expects me to shave. If I want to look out the window, I don't have to pretend I'm thinking about the rule against perpetuities. My boss doesn't care about stuff like that. The only thing my boss demands of me, besides unlimited juice refills, is that I be around when he needs me. The catch is, when he needs all of me. He needs more of me than ever showed up for work at a law office. I'm sure I did some good in the world as a lawyer, but I was divided. There was the coat and tie, and then there was me inside. I wanted to commit to something larger than myself, but somehow, I don't know, I could never quite do it. Not completely. In order to feel human, I had to hold something back. I don't hold back now. That's the difference. Now I'm committed to something smaller than myself. The problem is, I can't do this job forever. Kids grow up, they go to school. And then who am I going to be there for? The cat? I hate to think about it, but one of these days I'll be shopping for a third career. I'd like to try journalism, maybe, or teaching. But my son doesn't think much of those occupations. If I want his respect, there's only one thing I can be. A backhoe operator. Do you know a good school for that?
Earth on the Air invites you to share your thoughts on any of the pieces you have just heard.
And find out about contributing your tape to the program.
Write to us at Earth on the Air, P.O. Box 45883, Seattle, Washington, 98145.
The Person on the Street work profiles were contributed by Lowell Harvey.
The street musician was interviewed by Steve Scherer.
The migrant worker poem was read by Scott Ramirez.
The program was produced by Peter Mulloff and Suzanne Tedesco and engineered by Eric Bowerman at Jackstraw Productions in Seattle.
Partial funding was from the Mary Reynolds Babcock Foundation, the Town Creek Foundation, and listener members like you.
Special thanks to KUOW in Seattle, WYEP in Pittsburgh, and all the Earth on the Air volunteers and staff.
If you'd like a cassette copy of this program, call 1-800-800-3145.
Mention that you're interested in show number 32. For the Earth on the Air Radio Works and Peter Mulloff, I'm Janice Kane.